Hey, this is Ron Deal. Just real quick before we jump into the podcast, I just wanted to let you know that some of the things you're going to hear regarding Blended and Blessed may be a little bit outdated. We recorded this podcast some time ago, and obviously the coronavirus has changed some things for all of us. But the good news is Blended and Blessed will go on. Those of you in the Houston area that were planning to join us and be part of the live audience, you can be converted to a live stream audience, and you could still participate in this event. You know, it occurs to me that this is an opportunity for all of us. Tell a friend about Blended and Blessed. Everybody's kind of cooped up in their homes right now, and they need some encouragement, maybe something that's going to offer them some hope and some energy for their family. And this could very well be it. So Blended and Blessed, Saturday, April 25th. We hope that you'll join us as a part of our live stream audience, safe and secure from your home. To stay up to date with the latest details, go to blendedandblessed.com and be sure to follow us on Facebook at Family Life Blended or on Instagram at Family Life Blended. Now, on with the podcast.
I loved being a mother. I knew from a young age that being a mom was something that I always wanted to be. And when I met Andy, I fell in love with his girls, and they fell in love with me. And our kids got along great until we said, I do. And then the permanence of having me around, it changed everything.
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. This podcast brings together timeless wisdom and practical help and hope to blended families and those who love them. Now, if you're listening to this podcast within days of release, it's not too late. Our annual global live stream event for blended family couples is this Saturday, April 25th. Dr. Gary Chapman, Laura Petherbridge, Bill Butterworth, and others will be there speaking, sharing their heart, themes from our new book, Building Love Together in Blended Families. And because it's a live stream, it's not too late. You can still register and participate. It's very, very easy to do so. Just go to blendedandblessed.com and it will walk you through it. You know, when a parent dies, it's really devastating to a child, and the other parent has to carry the load of parenting. But what if one parent is still there, sort of, but really not there? That kind of ambiguity is confusing for everyone, the parent in charge, the children as well. But how does that impact a blended family? The kids, the parent, the step-parent who have to pick up the pieces. Heather and Andy Hetchler, who, by the way, during this podcast happened to be in two different places while we talked, are a married couple, blended family, have six children between the two of them, ages 21 down to 16. Despite their good faith and good intentions, they say they were blown away by how hard it was to bring their two families together. Eventually, they made some headway and began sharing what they learned with others. Heather has worked with stepmoms and stepmom retreats, and Andy and Heather have launched learningtostep.com. That's learning, the number two, step.com, which is an online portal that offers training and support to step families. I suggest you check that out. Many people think life would be easier if the other parent was missing in action. It's not. Here's my conversation with Andy and Heather Hetchler. A lot of people find the relationship with former spouses awkward, sometimes challenging, trying to work out co-parenting relationship and how do we, you know, help kids move between homes and different styles and those sorts of things. And every once in a while, I run across somebody who says, you know, it'd just be a whole lot easier if we just didn't even have to deal with them at all. Well, I think maybe you guys have a different perspective about that. You do have a co-parent relationship, Heather, with your former spouse, but I think maybe you guys wish you had more of a co-parent relationship with Andy's former spouse. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I would say, Rod, that we definitely have the tale of two cities, so to speak, with all of that. So in Heather's situation, her ex-spouse was able to buy a house in our subdivision and live just two blocks down the street. And I think in that situation, we have a pretty good co-parenting relationship with the three of us, and that kids feel pretty, I'll say, okay. It's never a great situation, but an okay situation for them to move pretty seamlessly between two homes, and we're all very flexible in that situation. On my ex side of things, she has not been involved in my two daughters' lives for, you know, over a 10-year period of time. And so that has led to a lot of challenges and compare contrasting that ends up happening in all of that. And yeah, there's been some, I'll say, heartache in my children, the two that I brought into the relationship, because of that.
From the outside, it appears as if you get it easier because she's really not involved in the kids' lives. That's not really the case, is it?
No, I would say that we don't have it easier. We have it different.
Hmm.
Because I believe that the other parent, she lives and breathes in her daughters. Even though she's not physically present, she is inside of them. She is a part of them. And like you say, whatever happens in the other home ends up in your home. So when there's nothing happening in the other home, we don't know where mom is, that ends up in your home too. And her absence creates a huge hole. And I think for me, I loved being a mother. I knew from a young age that being a mom was something that I always wanted to be. And when I met Andy, I fell in love with his girls and they fell in love with me. And our kids got along great until we said, I do. And then the permanence of having me around, it changed everything. And I think it was hard for them to have me when they wanted their mother. And it was very hard for my biological children to share me. And something that really surprised me that I did not realize going into it was I really struggled with the fact that I physically spent more time with my stepchildren than my biological children.
Yeah, because they were with you all the time. They were not going to their mom's house because she was disengaged from their life, right?
Absolutely.
And so you're with your stepchildren practically 24/7?
Yes.
And yeah, your kids have to share you with them. And I imagine that was even challenging at some point. Your kids may have picked up that Andy's kids weren't necessarily happy about having you in their life. So here your kids are having to share you with people who are not thrilled about you being in the picture, and that put some guilt on your heart and some challenge into your kids' heart. I imagine that just went in a lot of different negative directions.
It was something that I don't think either Andy and I were prepared for, and I don't think the kids were prepared for. I think, you know, we dealt with a lot of grief before we got married. You know, we grieved the loss of our first marriages. We worked through things, and I don't think we realized that there is new grief that happens when you blend two families. And the grieving of not being with my kids and being with my stepdaughters, who it wasn't necessarily me that I realized they didn't want around. It was the idea that if she's here, my mom's not here. And it caused some division between the kids, because you're right, they saw sometimes some outbursts or some mistreatment from their perspective, and they were protective of their mother.
Sure.
And so six children who played together in youth group at church, six kids who, you know, played in the backyard and did all these fun things that once we were married and living together kind of went to separate corners. And I think for Andy and I, that was hard for us to witness. And do you force them to spend time together? Do you give them space? I mean, when we married, they were 9 down to 3. They're in a six-year gap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot. Okay, so I just want to comment to the listener, notice that it's the absence of that biological mom in the kids' lives that's rippled into your home, that's caused more loss, new loss, and it's antagonized, if I could use that word, it's antagonized the developing new relationships between the step-siblings, between you as a stepmom and your stepchildren. And Andy, You're watching all this, and I know this is tugging at your heart to see your girls missing their mother. Where did that leave you in all this mix of everybody trying to figure out the new territory?
Sure. So, you know, you have this allegiance to your children. You're trying to be a parent to all the children. So, and then you're watching your wife go through difficult challenges too, and how to navigate all of this. And, you know, I think if I'm like most other guys, we like things a little more simple than complicated, especially when it comes to family life. And when you're coming home and, you know, from work, and you're walking in the door, and you feel like you can just feel the tension in all of that. And we want to fix it. How do you fix it? Well, some of these things are not fixable in that. You can help to navigate. You can help to listen. You can come up with new ideas of things to try. You know, one example that we saw with holidays, for example, that would tend to bring out a lot of this. You know, so you'd have the day-to-day going back and forth, and kids would see kids moving back and forth between two homes. Others, you know, that would bring a loss of sadness. But certainly the holiday season would kick a lot of this off to a much higher degree. And one of the things was Mother's Day, for example. How do you handle Mother's Day in the house? And we had to get creative in how we wanted to help navigate it. We never fixed it. We never solved it. But one of the things we did try and do for our house was to create Daughter's Day. And so really to put the attention on all the women in the house and to try and point the thinking in a different direction was one of the things that we tried to do.
Yeah, was that helpful? I mean, that's kind of a elephant in the room. We're going to find a different way of doing this, take the focus off of mother and Mother's Day and put it on daughters and Daughter's Day. And so it's a little bit of a redirect. And I'm sure that gained you something, but maybe didn't solve everything, yes?
No, there was still very much that underlying sadness, I would say, in all of that. And then, you know, to a certain degree, as much as you don't want to see that in any of your children, a little bit of competitiveness that can sometimes start to form because, okay, well, that's really my mom and that's really not your mom. And, you know, certainly when you do this at a much younger age like we did, those were just some natural tendencies of younger children anyway. So, you know, certainly those lines started to come through in some of those conversations, and trying to help kids navigate through that was challenging.
Yeah. I want to come back to a little bit later. We'll come back to this idea of what do you do as a parent in this situation when there is a biological parent who is essentially MIA, and what are some of the things you can do? I do think, though, it's creative what you guys tried to do with Mother's Day. You know, you're finding a way around it. That's helpful. So we'll come back to that. I promise the listener we'll get really practical here in just a minute. Before we do that, I wanted to just make a quick comment. You were talking to Andy about fixing, you know, and how do you do that. And let's just say the obvious right up front, the ultimate fix is for the MIA biological parent to come back into the picture, to reengage with their children. Now, if you happen to be listening right now and you're going, you know, that's me, no condemnation. But it's time for you to come back into the story and pick up your role. I do think sometimes people think, well, I've been away so long, it would just make it worse if I came back. Heather, I see you shaking your head. No, you would love for her to come back into the picture.
Ron, I pray every night for her. That has kept my heart soft. I pray that those girls will have a relationship someday with their mother. And if I can speak to any parent out there who's maybe thinking I've been away too long or I left and they'll never forgive me, I think that I would be speaking 100% correctly right now if I said if she walked through the door, my daughters would open their arms and welcome her home.
Yeah.
And I know that. And that doesn't take away from anything I've done or poured into them. I want my girls to have a relationship with their mother. I want them to have a healthy relationship. And that's something that's important to me because I care about them. I think that I've always told myself that I wanted her to be healthy and to come back. And so I'm prepared for that, and I know that it wouldn't take anything away from the relationship that I've built with my stepdaughters. I think that if there is a parent that's been away for a while, it's important that they come back in a healthy way. You know, there were some questions that I would get from my stepdaughters along the way that would say, you know, I don't think my mom loves me because she doesn't see me. And I would always say to them, I believe your mom loves you. She's not showing it to you in the way that you want her to show it to you. So I would continue to kind of feed and build into them in terms of keeping their bridge open with their mother. There was a time recently, actually, when my oldest stepdaughter graduated high school and she came home and there was a package on the doorstep. And she noticed the return address and it was from her mom. And she hadn't seen or spoken to her mom in over 10 years.
Wow.
And she asked me if I would sit with her and I would open it with her. And I sat there and she read the letter to me. She opened and her mom sent her a necklace. And I just smiled because I had bought her a similar necklace for graduation. And I had decided in that moment that I wasn't going to give her that gift because I never wanted there to be competition between the two of us. And when she opened the necklace for her mom, I could see some hesitation. And later she came to me and she said, "Will it hurt your feelings if I wear this necklace?" And I said, "Not at all." I said, "I think that's very sweet that you're even asking, but you wear that necklace." As I thought of that, that was one thing she had had in 10 years. And so when I took her to college 2 months later, when I walked out the door, I put that necklace on her pillow with a letter about how I love her and that I encourage her and that there will never be any type of competition between me and her mother. And she sent me a picture, 2 days later, a selfie on the first day of school, and she was wearing both necklaces. And I can only imagine what a child is thinking sometimes, trying to wrestle with those things about, if I love my mom, will I hurt my stepmom? If I love my stepmom, will I hurt my mom? And I just wanted her to know that I would encourage a healthy relationship with her mom.
And that's a beautiful picture of grace, of what love and sacrificial love for you really looks like for your daughter. It's giving her the freedom to be connected to each in whatever way that is. Now, this is a beautiful picture, her wearing both necklaces to me. It's a metaphor of what children are experiencing. Whether real or imagined, they have a relationship with this missing parent. And that person is still in their heart, in their life, sort of. But at the same time, she's got a real relationship with you, and so she literally carries, or in this case, wears, each of you in your own unique way in her heart, in her life. And it's never healthy to fan that into a competition. So for you to say there's no competition, you know, your relationship with your mother is as it should be, meaning you can be drawn to her and hope for her, and that's not a threat. To me, that's very, very significant in the life of a child. But I want us to just for a minute, Andy and Heather, go into what is the impact emotionally, psychologically, relationally of a child who is wrestling with this sort of ambiguity all along. And when I say ambiguity, let me just explain. My father is 86 years old, and he is declining emotionally and mentally, and is now in an assisted care facility. And every time I see him or talk to him, I get a sense he's losing more and more memory. He's not connecting to things. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not there. And at the end of the day, a lot of us can relate to that. We have our aging parent, but we don't have our aging parent. That's what we call ambiguous loss. Same thing happens in this sort of a situation where, Andy, your children have a relationship with their mother, sort of. It's an ambiguous loss. They have her, but they don't have her. Like physically, she still exists, but relationally and from a dependability standpoint, they cannot rely on her. So it's have and not have all at the same time, which means you don't really know what you have, right? It leaves you in this place of not knowing. And every time there's a hope for a connection or there's a promise that is not fulfilled, well, there's just more loss and more sadness and more dealing with reality. And it is difficult. How do you talk with your kids? I'm curious that from both of you. Andy, let's start with you. How have you spoken with your girls through the years about this experience? Tried to put words on it? Like, what have the conversations been?
Yeah, so a couple of things come to mind around those points. And as you're further along into this, you got to rewind the tape and think through some of those moments. And one that jumped out for me is, so again, going back to this tale of two cities, the dynamic between the two homes and the way that kids move seamlessly between two homes. And my two biological kids saw that their dad bought a house in the subdivision. And so, ironically, about a year later after that, the house very next to us went up for sale. The sign goes in the front yard. And the kids were younger then, but my youngest daughter at the time specifically said, "I can't wait until my mom buys that house." And the ironic thing was, is it had been a couple of years since she had even heard from mom in all of that. And so I think the other piece, when you start talking about ambiguity and in the context of all this, especially when children are young, you know, my youngest was three when mom, you know, decided to leave the family. And so not only are you dealing with the reality of that, but you're also dealing with, to a certain degree, children will, where there's a gap, start to fill in their own storyline on what mom was like and all of those types of things. And so there almost becomes some level of fantasy in all that with younger children as well. So you're having to navigate those things. So in the case of the house going for sale, you kind of got to walk through and say, yeah, that might be a really great idea, but I'm not exactly sure how all that would work, you know, and you're trying to gently let the child down from their idea, but not still get this really deep, you know, expectation forming.
And walking that line, I think, is so delicate. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, what does the scripture say? Proverbs 13:12, hope deferred makes the heart sick.
Yeah.
But a desire fulfilled is a tree of life. How do you deal with hope and desire in a child's heart when you have an adult perspective about what's realistic? It's a delicate line to sometimes say the truth, but at the same time not be critical of that parent because you hope that they'll come back and you want the child to have an open relationship with them. And so, Heather, you were telling a story a minute ago. You said to one of the girls, "I think your mom does love you. She just isn't showing it right now." And that's an adult perspective, and you may be absolutely right about that. And at the same time, it's like, well, we don't really know. And that is such delicate territory to maybe keep hope alive in a young child's heart or even an adult. And they're now adults, and to keep hope alive in their heart. But at the same time, what are your thoughts about speaking the truth?
Ron, you're right about that. It's very delicate. And I think one thing that's important is that the couple is on the same page too. So, you know, there are times where the girls would come and want to talk to me, and I wanted to make sure that I was sharing something that my husband would support. So either I would talk to him first, or if it was one of those kind of organic conversations, I would follow up with him later and then say, you know, if you don't agree, Andy, do you want me to go back and talk to the girls, or do you want me to share? And I think something, too, that's important to point out is each of the two girls had different experiences. My oldest and I bonded quickly, and she seemed on the outside to kind of be better with everything. My younger stepdaughter, it kind of depended, I used to say, on the day, but it was really more on the hour. Like you talk about the crock pot approach, she's our little jalapeno pepper because she would just fluctuate on how she felt about me. So talking to them, you know, being honest, because you don't want to get their hopes up. And like when Andy was pointing out, I think for our youngest especially, she had a real fantasy of what her life would be like if her mom was in the picture. And while he and I did not agree that that's what would happen, sharing that with someone who's 4, 5, and 6, you can't have the same type of conversations that we can have now. And actually now when they want to talk about it, Andy's able to share more details or talk more in depth with them. And I think that they've made more of a piece looking back than they walked through when we were living it, especially in the early years.
Andy, what was it like for you to try to walk that line of speaking truth, but at the same time, not setting them up for disappointment?
Yeah, not an easy thing, and I won't ever pretend that I got it right every time in all of that, but as long as you're trying to take a true approach, and I think what Heather said too, making sure that you're being appropriate and age appropriate. I don't think she said those words, but I think really trying to understand where is the kid in their age appropriateness and maturity with information. And there were a lot of things that I chose not to say till my daughters were getting to that 16, 17, 18. And as some of the questions came back and on that I really was very reserved in how much I told them about the reality of things and really kind of waited to share a lot of that information about what really happened and what really went on, and to help them to say, look, you may not know and you may not understand, but to be also very careful not to throw the other parent under the bus.
Yes.
In all of that, so to speak, because it is amazing that the amount of loyalty a kid will have, even with a parent who's not there. And so that will turn against whoever is going and saying things, even if it's true in some regards for that. So being very, very careful, and it's not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, I think one of the traps, for example, that parents should really watch for is finding yourself trying to change the child's mind about the missing parent. I think that's a dangerous trap. Now, sometimes you do have to speak some truth. Imagine a situation where a child, and not just your kids, but you guys have talked with lots of other parents who are in similar circumstances. So let's just talk around this for a minute. You can imagine a child kind of defending the missing parent. No, you don't understand. She wants to be around, or dad wants to be around, but, you know, something's preventing him. And last time, dad told me that he couldn't come see us because you did something, right? So blame shifting onto your household, and you're going, that is so not right. I think it's okay to walk that line and talk all the way around both sides. I think it's okay to say, well, you know, no, I'm not sure why your dad said that, but here's our side of that. We were there. We didn't say this. We didn't communicate that. I'm not sure why he said that. See, the tone of voice leaves open the possibility there for the child's relationship. What you don't want to do is say, nope, I need to set you straight about your father. Because now it's created this dynamic where you say, yes, he did, and the child says, no, he didn't. And now you and the child are against one another about that person. Now think about how much power, ironically, that gives to the missing parent, right? So it's delicate. I think maybe the response is to talk on both sides. I'm so glad you're hopeful about seeing your dad this weekend. You know, dad calls and says, I'm going to come see you. And you're, as the adult, you're going, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. I'm so glad you're hopeful about seeing him this weekend. I sure hope that happens for you. I'm curious. And then you might follow it up and say, I'm curious, if he doesn't show up, have you thought about what you might do with your time? Again, you're not trying to sway them or deflect or convince them. I think you're just trying to help them deal with some of the realities of that. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I would agree definitely with that. And the other thing that popped in my head as you were talking there, Ron, is I don't think you ever want to teach your children to disrespect a parent, because that will also work against you at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Ron, I think something that was important to Andy and I is creating space where our kids felt safe to share anything. We wanted to listen to them, and even if we knew what they were saying wasn't going to happen or wasn't necessarily true, we wanted them to be able to express to us that, you know, maybe like they wish they were with their mom, or they wish things were different, or even in the case of my kids talking about things with their dad, I always wanted them to feel that this was a safe place for them to share their feelings and to kind of help them work through it. And I think that that has helped build relationships for all of us in a place where they know there's no right or wrong way to feel, and that they can come and share what they're walking through. And we're going to listen. And then, you know, we may direct. And there was a time too, I remember, when my youngest stepdaughter was upset with me and she said, you know, I think you're the reason my mom's not here.
Hmm.
Well, I met Andy long after they were divorced. I never met their mom. And so I listened to her. I actually held her that night while she was crying. And I said, I hear what you're saying. And I want you to know that this is when I met your dad. This is, and I didn't go on and on. I just gave her a few facts,
mm-hmm.
but I listened to her. And I think she was desperately trying to find a reason why her mom wasn't there.
Yeah. Listening was what gave you the right to say, but let me just tell you some facts and come around the other side of it. It's validating, hearing, sitting with, holding, hugging that hurt. That's what earns you the right, I think, to come around the other side. By the way, I want to point our listener to a couple of articles in the show notes that we've got for you. One's called Where's Mom? And it's just about when a parent is missing in action. And another article that you two, Andy and Heather, have been kind of demonstrating well for our listeners as we've been going along, and it's on emotional coaching. You know, what do you do when a child has a hurt or loss, and how do you help them with it? And that sitting and listening and holding and validating their emotions and letting them know that that's not a threat to you, the fact that they have some thoughts or feelings about this, and helping them put words on those emotions, those are some things, that article on emotional coaching, that I think will be really helpful. But hugging the hurt, I want to camp out on that for just a second. Andy, how do you hug the hurt in your girls over the years? How have you gone about trying to do that?
Well, I think trying to listen. And I've had to probably slow myself down a little bit at times, too, because I tend to want to solve problems and not watch my children in pain and all of that. So, you know, oh, well, here's what we can do, or, you know, have you thought about this or that type of thing? And so I think as a natural problem solver type personality, being more patient in all of that. I think the other thing that I've learned too is those moments where you can do those things come very unexpectedly. You know, you might just be driving in a car, for example, and you might be pulling into the driveway and all of a sudden this conversation starts. And, you know, I might have a natural tendency to say, okay, let's go into the house right away and, you know, we'll finish this conversation. Maybe just camping out in the driveway for 5 minutes is the next right best thing to do in that particular moment.
Sometimes when you're tired... As a parent, as an adult, you've worked all day, you're spent, and then that conversation happens in the car. It really takes prayer. Like, Lord, give me the energy to suck it up and join in this moment and let it last rather than cutting it off. Amen?
Amen. Amen.
I mean, those are hard, hard moments for us. I mean, it would be awkward and challenging to begin with. Then you just add you're completely depleted. But when kids begin to speak, man, that's something I've certainly learned with my children. It's when they start talking, boy, I need to let them. I need to find a way to gear up and get in that space because I can't make them talk when I want them to. I don't know why they don't just do it for good old dad, but but they won't. But once they start talking, I've got to jump into that space. Let me make a quick little observation, and I'm curious, Heather and Andy, what you guys have seen in your household and others. You know, I think one of the things that happens for children when there's a parent that's missing in their life is the way it gets internalized. You know, to some degree, they don't feel loved. You know, Heather, you told the story about one of the girls saying, I'm not sure my mom loves me. And along with that comes this loss of identity and a sense of worthiness, like, am I worthy of love? And I think sometimes the way we internalize those moments in our world for all of us is shame or blame. We either get mad at somebody and blame others, or we feel badly about ourselves. There's another side to it, and that's when a parent is missing, you kind of lose structure and safety in your world. Like, you don't know what to depend on and who's reliable and who's not. And now I have this reliable stepmom in your case, and that's great, but that's not exactly what I want. And so I'm a little conflicted internally about all that. And it seems to be that sometimes what people move toward out of that loss of safety is either they move into chaos in their world, and they kind of get angry and act out, and kids will do that, turn towards other things or other people to try to fix their life, or they go into control mode where they try to make things happen and they try to manage all the relationships in their family. So have you guys seen that shame-blame continuum, that chaos-control sort of continuum? Have you seen that in your family or others?
Well, I think if I can share, Ron, we have seen that in our family, and we've also seen it in many of the families we've worked with and couples that we've talked to. I think for our youngest, there was that sense of who am I if my own, I remember her telling me specifically, I don't want you to love me, Heather, if my own mom doesn't.
Mm.
Now, that wasn't necessarily true, but that's how she was feeling.
By the way, that's a shame comment. I don't want you to love me if my own mom won't. She's telling you about her personal sense of shame. I'm unworthy of that. Yeah, keep going.
Absolutely. And I came to understand that by listening to her. And I remember when we got married, I wanted to treat all the kids the same. And I love to make a big deal about everyone's birthday and holidays. And so I would do everything for my stepdaughters that I would do for my biological kids. Make a big cake, wrap their presents, have everything set up with balloons in the morning. And no thank you, no nothing. And one time she told me, if my own mom can't bake my birthday cake, I don't want one from you. And so here I was thinking, I've done all this for you, and you're not grateful, you don't care. But it was like God put that on my heart. This isn't about you, Heather. This is about her pain, and you cannot take it personally.
And that is so very hard. I'm so appreciative of you sharing that. For all of us as parents, when we put forth effort, it's just nice to get a thank you. Step parents really don't get that. It adds to your sense of rejection. And it's so hard to deflect that away from yourself and turn and say, but what is this telling me about her?
And it is hard. And I did not always do it right. And I sometimes would push harder into her to prove to her that I loved her, to prove to her that I was worthy of her trust. And in many ways, that backfired, and she pulled further from me.
Hmm. And of course, you would try that. I mean, you want to try to convince her you do love her, and that the way she's thinking about you is not correct. But this is so good, because that's not the problem. It's not about how she's thinking about you. It's how she's thinking about herself.
Yeah. And I had to come to a point where I am going to do these things for her because I love my husband, because she is his daughter. And that completely changed how I felt. And it's interesting how that impacted my feelings. Before, I was doing it to earn her trust, to earn her love, to prove to her that I was a great mother. And when I shifted my thoughts to saying, my identity as a stepmom isn't dependent on whether she thanks me, I'm going to love her because I love my husband and because I made a vow before God.
That's a great shift. And I would just add, that may not be where you end up, but that is the first step to how you deal with that difficult situation. It's a way to keep your motivation alive while you're hoping for more eventually down the road. Andy, were you going to say something?
Yeah, I think what I've heard said in the past, and I think you've used this example in the past too, Ron, is how do you learn how to hug a porcupine?
Very carefully. Guys, I want you to comment on parenting when there's a missing biological parent in the other home from each of your points of view. So, Andy, as the biological parent, what are the temptations to go easy on the girls when they're with you, to, they've got it rough, and is that a temptation that you had to wrestle with? I'm wondering what you would say about that. And Heather, I'm wondering for you, what happened to your authority as a stepmom? How did you being the only person there and the girls liking you, but then not necessarily wanting to move towards you completely because they really want their mom in their life, how did that affect how you get things done around the house and your authority as a parent? Andy, why don't you go first?
Sure. So a couple of things that are jumping out at me, right? So in our case where, I have full custody full time and other kids were moving back and forth, here's an interesting dynamic that would happen. So if the kids would move over to their dad's house and they'd go out and go to a movie or what have you, then come back and talk about that experience, you know, there'd be a switch that would kind of sometimes go off in my head and go, well, should I have taken the two girls to a movie on my end? Should I only do that when I've got all six kids, you know, as part of our troop and go out and do that? So I had to sometimes catch myself about trying to make things overly fair in all of that. And so that was a dynamic that I had to wrestle in myself and try and find a right balance in some of those things. So I would say you always want to try and find this balance where you can spend quality time with your kids, but maybe don't always get into this trying to do everything even type approach.
Yeah, I can see how that would be a temptation. You don't want your kids missing out.
Exactly.
Yeah. Heather, how about you? How did it affect your role as a stepmom?
So for me, Ron, I think what surprised me the most was I felt as if I had all the responsibility of being the mother, but not all the authority. And I understand that that's part of the step-parenting role. But that was difficult for me sometimes, and I didn't have that inherent trust. So with my biological kids, you know, I would set expectations. They had a different level of respect and trust of me, which wasn't the same with my stepkids, which makes sense. But because, you know, I stepped into that role really wanting to love on the girls and make all the kids feel as if we were one family, and to get the pushback was very difficult. And I think it also kind of leaked into our marriage, because there were times where I wanted certain things that I think just weren't possible at the early stages. And one thing that Andy and I did, and we had a lot of closed-door conversations, we ended up setting up some kind of family contract. We had expectations about chores, treatment, lying, things like that. And then we put consequences. So if he was at work, if he was traveling for a week, and let's say one of my stepdaughters broke a family rule, it wasn't like, oh, Heather's so mean, she's making me do this, or Heather's so this. It's, oh, we all agree that this is the consequence for not doing a chore, or this is the consequence.
At that point, you're standing in for Dad. You're an extension of Dad, but you're not having to stand on your own two feet, which was fragile at that time with the girls.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, you know, and I hope that we both have learned and blessed each other a lot through this, but I remember a moment where my younger stepdaughter was saying some words to me, and Andy was in the kitchen, and I was extremely hurt with the way she was talking to me. And he stopped and said, "That is my wife. You will not talk to her that way."
Hmm. And what did that do for you in that moment?
It made me feel so completely supported and understood that he recognized the dynamic that was going on. And it wasn't like, she's your stepmom, you better love her or treat her well. It was like, we're taking the step out of it. I'm having you look at her. This is my wife. This is my partner. And I want you to be respectful towards her.
Mm-hmm. It was empowering, and it affirmed you as his wife. You were not alone in that moment.
Exactly. And I think that that's one of the dangers or consequences, I don't know if I'm using the right words, that can happen in a marriage with a step couple, is that if you don't sometimes think that you're on the same page, or maybe you want your spouse to step in and do something, you can start to believe that they don't care, or that they're not protecting you. But that's not really necessarily their job, that there's just inherent challenges when you become a step parent.
Yeah. Okay, Andy, I got to turn to you in that moment. Did you have to find some courage to make that statement?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I felt like that was the right call in the moment. And again, trying to figure out how you de-escalate quickly some of these situations where you can see the storm brewing, and trying to make it better for everybody. And I think that's the real challenge in a lot of this too, is just this whole thing about where does loyalty happen? And, you know, kids look at it from how is my dad versus that, you know, it's a tricky landscape when this whole concept of loyalty really starts to kick in.
Well, I got to just comment for the listener. I think one of the things that was brilliant about that statement in that moment is, you know, you didn't make a statement about what they should feel, what your daughter should feel. You made a statement about what you feel. In other words, hey, this is my wife and you're going to love her. That's a totally different statement than this is my wife and you're not going to treat her that way. What you're saying is I'm in charge of that relationship and I'm setting a tone for her as my wife, for Heather in this home. I'm not dictating or trying to dictate what you as a child are going to feel about that whole thing. I'm just telling you where the boundaries are about her from my point of view. And I think that's where the power is in that moment. I want to shift gears just for a minute because unique to your family situation, in the midst of all of this, dealing with the missing parent and how it ripples into your home and how you're going to try to walk with the kids over time about that, you got a diagnosis, Heather.
In May of 2018, I went in for a regular mammogram and found that I had stage one cancer. And then after an MRI to clear that that's all I had, found out that I had two more spots of cancer and went through surgery, radiation, and I'm very grateful to say that I'm cancer-free now. But starting on a cancer journey is an emotional journey that I had never, I was not prepared for. And it has changed me. It has humbled me. As much as I felt like being a step parent had drawn me to live every day on prayer and with Jesus, going through cancer, something that you cannot control at all, changed me. It changed a lot of my perspectives. I think it drew Andy and I closer. It takes away a lot of the clutter. I think it's actually helped me to be a better wife and step parent. I was actually just sharing this with Andy. I remember when we would, in the middle of, I'd say those couple first years were probably our roughest. And I could remember going on date nights and seeing young couples and saying, oh, they've got butterflies in their stomachs and I have knots and oh, young love. And when I was going through my cancer, I would see older couples and I would be grieving inside and begging God, Lord, let me grow old with this man. Let me make memories with this man.
Wow.
Give me more years. And so for all the times that sometimes I was frustrated with him or I wanted things a certain way, and even though my intentions were good and I just wanted our family to be covered in love and peace, it just really shifted how I looked at him and how I looked at my family in just a much more deeper way. And that was the verse that God laid on my heart at the beginning of my cancer journey was Proverbs 3:5-6. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Acknowledge him in all your ways and he will make your path straight. And I know my destiny. I know where I'm going to spend eternity. I know where we're raising our children to believe their eternity is. And God does not promise us a bumpy free ride. But if we keep our eyes fixed on him, he will make our path straight. So whether it's cancer or, you know, with our stepfamily, like not to get caught up in all the bumps and the hills and the mountains that arise, but to fix our eyes on Jesus and not trying to fix other people.
Well, first of all, let me just say I'm so glad you're cancer-free today.
Thank you.
We're glad to have you around, and I appreciate both of you so very much, and so I'm glad that has ended well. And unfortunately, we're not going to do this story justice. I wish we could dive in and talk a whole lot more about that, but unfortunately, we can't. You talked about how it made a difference. It shifted some of your perspective towards your husband, towards your family. I want to connect the two parts of this story. What we've been talking about, the children missing their mother and now having the potential of missing their stepmother. I'm wondering if anything else shifted in the family besides your perspective. Andy, I'm curious, did anything else shift with you, with your girls, with your stepkids, Heather's kids?
So I think one of the tie-ins that's similar about these two stories is you learn with cancer that there is no straight line. There's so many left turns, right turns, and all that. And I think that's the similarity with stepfamily life. You hope for certain things to happen, but the reality starts to kick in, and it's a lot of turns, a lot of unknowns, a lot of waiting for timing to happen on things, test results to come in. and a lot of uncertainty and, to a certain degree, some level of anxiety that kicks in with all of that. And I think that's how those two stories are somewhat similar, and trying to navigate that in wise ways, and I think really just stopping and pausing and leaning on God is really just such an important piece to both of those.
Amen. Absolutely. I got to wonder if the girls didn't look at you a little differently going through that.
Well, I think any type of illness or other type of potential, you know, additional pressure on certain situations, it does make you pause and inventory and say, what would it be if? And hopefully it does kick in a level of appreciation at some point, but it also brings a lot of additional emotion into these situations as well. And so being cognizant of that and, again, trying to navigate wisely is the important piece.
I think for, if I can say too, I think with my youngest stepdaughter, she had a lot of questions about my cancer. You know, for me, I tried to maintain a very normal life. I didn't want things to change for the kids. I didn't want things to change. So I did everything I normally would do. I tried to keep the schedule the same and really be present because I believed I would be okay and I didn't want to put that on the kids. But my younger stepdaughter, I think, felt a lot of guilt. She wasn't responsible for my cancer, but she talked to me about how there were times where she didn't like me. She wanted me to go away. And she felt somehow responsible to some degree, if I can use that wording. And I think in some ways we have drawn closer through all of this, because as much as that push-pull, right, Ron, as much as she didn't always want me in her life, the idea of potentially losing me was difficult. And because she has felt great loss, she understands what great loss feels like. My biological children have not lost a parent or a grandparent. They have not undergone that type of loss before. And so I think for her and I, God used it to kind of bring us closer.
I know there came a day where she articulated that to you. You mind telling us about that?
So my youngest stepdaughter graduated high school and she moved across country to pursue a full-time job. She's doing great. She called me about 2 months in and she told me she wanted to thank me. She's like, I don't know how you figured out all the things I was doing. I don't know how you knew all the trouble I was in. And I did not like you busting me at the time. I did not like some of your talks. I did not like some of your boundaries. But I don't think I'd be here today if you and Dad hadn't held me accountable. And I didn't want your help at the time. I didn't like you a lot of the times. But I appreciate that you never gave up on me.
Mm. Wow.
And I just want to share that for all those step-parents out there that are struggling right now, that think what they're doing isn't making a difference. Because anytime you're pouring into a child, especially without expectations, you are making a difference. And don't measure it by the verbal words or the actions, but continue to lift it up in prayer, continue to pour in, and you are blessing that child, you're blessing your spouse, you're making a difference.
Well, we've talked about a number of things that parents can practically do to help a child when there's a parent that is missing. We've talked, for example, about not falling into the trap of trying to change their mind about the parent or change their thoughts or feelings. So we've talked about giving them permission to stay emotionally connected to that other parent, even though they're really not around and the future is uncertain about the nature of their relationship. We talked about hugging the hurt in kids and how that doesn't seem to fix it, but it really does help when you come alongside. And we talked about other aspects of emotional coaching where you hear their feelings, you validate that, you do a whole lot of listening, you show a lot of compassion, and then there's an opportunity sometimes to share a fact and to point out something that helps them have a little bit more objectivity and perspective about this situation. We talked about supporting each other, bioparent really setting up that step-parent to be able to follow through with rules and be an extension of the parent's authority, especially when things are fragile with the kids. We talked about having parental unity and how important that is, and talking a lot about what you expect and then working together and supporting each other with the children. And we talked about creative ways of handling holidays and Mother's Day in particular, your story about that. You know, one thing that we really haven't talked a little bit about is the role of grandparents or step-grandparents in a situation like this. I imagine they can help fill some gaps when that other biological parent is uninvolved. I'm wondering what thoughts you guys might have about them. You've been listening to my conversation with Andy and Heather Hetchler. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. You'll hear Heather's response to that question in just a minute. You know, as I talked with the Hetchlers, you may have noticed a theme about how to best help a child who has an absent parent. It's managing yourself. In the face of an emotional child, you know, that gives blame that you don't deserve and disrespect and a lack of appreciation for all you do, what is needed most is for you to remain calm. I mean, you know, what an upset, anxious child needs is a calm, responsive adult. Now, I've completely lost it when dealing with my kids, so I know how hard this is. You'll blow it, just like I have. At some point, that'll happen. But what do? We get back up and we try again to regulate ourselves, to bring the best of us into the circumstances when our children are upset, when there's difficulty in their lives. I mean, here's what I try to remember. You know, I don't have to be angry just because my child is angry. I don't have to be anxious just because they're anxious or reactive. The fruit of the Spirit, the one called self-control, is really, really helpful when there are circumstances in your child's life that you can't control. No, we can't control the externals, but we can strive to control ourselves. Then you can listen and affirm a child's emotions. Then you can not take their comments personally. Then you can see beneath their anger to the hurt and sadness that's underneath. Then you can remain calm and in charge of yourself, even when they aren't. When you can't change your child or their circumstances, strive for self-control. If you'd like more information about my guests, you'll find it in the show notes, or you can just simply check it out at the Family Life Blended podcast page at familylife.com/podcasts. By the way, your feedback means a lot to me, to the team here. Do me a favor right now. Give us a rating or write a review. It encourages our team and it helps other people find the podcast. That's one of the things you can do is be influencing those around you with just little simple things. You can share this podcast. You can say something about it on social media, or you can give us a rating and write a review. All of that is really helpful. And if you're listening perhaps for the first time, subscribe. We would invite you to do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Family Life Blended with Ron Deal. And remember to look at the show notes for links to additional resources. You can also learn about our other podcasts on the Family Life Podcast Network. If you're not familiar with us, Family Life Blended, a part of the ministry called Family Life, is the leading resource ministry for stepfamilies around the world. Visit us at familylife.com/blended. We have all kinds of free stuff for you. Resources, articles, books, there's stuff to listen to. But what's coming up this week on Saturday, April 25th, is our next Blended and Blessed live stream. It's a one-day event. Our theme is Building Love Together in Blended Families, and the event features Dr. Gary Chapman, who will be sharing the stage with me and others. If you're not familiar with Gary, he's the New York Times best-selling author of The Five Love Languages and multiple books. It is going to be a real treat. I hope that you're going to join us. Now, this is a live stream event, which means you can be anywhere in the world and participate. All you got to do is register online. It doesn't cost very much. You can watch through your smartphone or your laptop at home. So learn all about the event at blendedandblessed.com. You know, one thing that we really haven't talked a little bit about is the role of grandparents or step-grandparents in a situation like this. I'm wondering what thoughts you guys might have about them.
So Ron, I think with grandparents, we have to recognize too that there's a lot of grieving that they go through when their child goes through a divorce or they lose their partner to death. And they want to jump in and help. And I think if I could give grandparents listening any advice is to recognize that your son or daughter, if they married someone with children, those children are now their children. And a way to bless your son or daughter is to treat all of his or her new children the same. You may not feel the same, and you may feel a lot of guilt or stress over maybe what your biological grandchildren have gone through, especially if your biological grandkids are the one who have a parent that's missing in action. But to recognize that there are other grandkids in the house, and they will notice a difference if there's a different treatment in terms of gift giving or time spent. And it's not about how you feel towards the kids, but you can bless your son or daughter by recognizing that they now have additional children and to treat them the same.
That's good. That's good. Andy, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I would say as maybe a coachable moment for the grandparents themselves too, is to recognize that you may try this approach and pour in equally to all the kids, and you may get a much more natural response from what might be biological grandchildren versus the step-grandchildren. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't try. It doesn't mean that you should be easily, I guess, disappointed or offended by all of that. There's just that natural bond that will happen. And so you're starting to walk just a small step into a step-parenting role as a grandparent, and don't be surprised or caught off guard with it. Just keep trying.
That's good. And I'm just going to say a word to, if you're the grandparent and it's your adult child who is MIA, who is missing in action, I think there's a great temptation that you would want to try to fix it all for your grandchildren, that you would want to try to cover all those bases, and you certainly can be involved, and you can be involved to a large degree. Hey, grandparents are supposed to spoil their grandkids. Just don't do it excessively. Just don't become boundaryless. Sometimes that temptation is there because you feel guilty for what your child has done to your grandchildren. Nope, just be a regular grandparent and spoil them a little bit. Next time, we'll hear from author and sex therapist Dr. Julie Slattery about the challenges of sex for couples in subsequent marriages.
And you can be married for decades and not actually have ever experienced true oneness or sexual intimacy. It's always been about your own fears or even your own pleasure, and it's never become about a shared journey.
That's Dr. Julie Slattery next time on Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. I appreciate you listening. And thanks to our Family Life Legacy partners for donating and making this podcast possible. Our chief audio engineer is Keith Lynch, Bruce Goff, our producer. Our mastering engineer is Justin Adams, and theme music provided by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is produced by Family Life and is part of the Family Life Podcast Network.